Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in to our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Lindsay, Donna, and Laura, and our special guest, Robin Mountain from Natabba African Safaris.
Yay! Thank you for joining us.
The continent of Africa and the countries contained within are rich in culture, natural beauty, welcoming people, and a diverse offering of cuisine, music, biodiversity, and of course its native animals and wildlife. It's a continent that once experienced will open places in your soul you had long forgotten about and offer you moments of great joy and peace. One of the most wonderful ways to experience this continent when you travel is to journey to South Africa, Tanzania, or Uganda and include a safari. Our guest today has brought new meaning to the word safari, and he is joining us to talk about his native land, South Africa, and also to share some of the newer offerings to Tanzania and Uganda, where they are able to include experiencing gorillas in their natural habitat. They have so much to share with us, so buckle up, keep your eyes peeled for one of the big five, and let's get started. So welcome, Robin.
Let's go, guys. Let's go, guys. Here we go.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
And thank you so much for inviting me to share my passion. As I often say to people, we don't sell Africa. You know, I go to a lot of these travel shows and people, I'll hear them speaking to each other and like, what do you sell? Oh, I sell the Caribbean. I don't sell Africa, I show it, because I am an African. You know, I've often said you can beat all sorts of things out of me, but you can't beat the African out of me. And I was sharing a bit earlier, the word Natabba is our last name in Zulu. It means mountain. And when Stella and I started the business 15 years ago, we weren't sure what to call it. We actually, what brought me to America in 1999 is I specialize in artificial insemination of honey queen bees. And I ended up teaching at Kentucky State University. That's why I'm in Frankfort, Kentucky. And the first group of people I took over was a group of beekeepers. And why I mention that, it was just my passion for what I do. And the same thing, I heard a lovely talk by a gentleman recently from BNI, from Business Networks International. And he spoke about being in the wax or being in the flame. And if you're in your business and you're in the wax, you know you're in the wax. You're dragging, you're beaten. Things are battling. When you're in that flame, doesn't matter how tired you are, like Stella and I are right now from the road trips we've just done, I'm putting together a coffee safari at the moment. That's going to be Uganda and Tanzania. And it's still that same excitement, that enthusiasm when the itinerary comes back from my office in Tanzania and Uganda. And we're marrying those two together because we're going to do a gorilla safari as well. It's that passion that we started the company. This morning when I got out of bed, there wasn't too much fire or passion. But we had to get going because I had an early morning Skype meeting and Stella had another meeting as well. But, you know, with any business, with anything you do, that passion is what people go for. And the slogan that has grown our company is, we don't send you to Africa, we take you. Even now when we had a scheduled trip in June that didn't happen. I had a whole group of people booked onto it and cancelled at the last moment, and we had two people left. And I actually spoke to them and their agent this morning. They didn't have a private guide in Cape Town, private guides in the Kruger Park, and also privately guided in the Victoria Falls. And they are quite thrilled about it because not always everybody you want in the group, but no, these two ladies are very excited about it, and that is the attention to detail. Even today, almost every single week of the year, we have clients in Africa. And today, Stella was getting some emails back or WhatsApp messages from one of the guides we use in Cape Town. And she asked how it's going, and she said, it happens every time because of jet lag. You fly over there, you're so excited. We go into the penguins and Cape Point. When we come back, one usually sleeps on the way back. But, you know, again, this is just the contact that we have. So that's important.
Hey, Robin, if someone's thinking about going on a safari, what are some of the things that they should be thinking about?
Okay, that's what I was about to go on to. One of a couple of words that we use in our business that explain a good safari, and you can call it a cruise or an experience, whatever you want as well, is to think of something that is authentic. You know, why are you using a certain company? I don't practice being a South African. I am one. I don't practice my accent, and I didn't buy it at Walmart. This is who I am. Intimate. I mean, I even told these ladies, and that was the segue into this, that, you know, if something would go wrong with them, my mother's 4 hours drive away from Cape Town, she would come and visit them if anything went wrong, and my mum would. My mum joined me on the last trip that I led to South Africa in December of last year. Unique. Why do I say unique? Because you can go to any one of these big companies that sell everything and Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, that frightens me. There's another safari company. They do beautiful safaris in Africa, and you see that, and India. You either do one or the other. You mm-hmm. don't do both. So anyway, again, unique. One of the small things that we do in Cape Town is we try to invite guest speakers. And one of the guest speakers we have is Christopher Brand, who was one of Nelson Mandela's prison warders. In fact, he was his head prison warder. And the book that he wrote is called Mandela, My Prisoner, My Friend. So that's unique. Again, secure. Secure is also very, very important. Our CEO in Cape Town is a retired military officer, the same as myself. He actually knew Stella before I did. So, you know, we're constantly getting reports of anything going. I just read today about some fake news that came out of South Africa. Yeah, we all know too well what fake news is in America. Yeah. The fake news that came out of South Africa about land grabs. And it had Stella and myself worried. And we sort of phoned our family and they said, what? Who? Where? When? So, again, the security is important. All right, guys. When one's looking at sending clients to Southern Africa, also East Africa, we can fly via Johannesburg, but we often do that via Nairobi or via Europe. We have three major ports that we fly out of. It's Washington D.C., New York, and that's South African Airways, and then Delta is out of Atlanta. We just did a couple of presentations in Atlanta. And, you know, I don't even discuss South African Airways when I'm down there because you're in Atlanta.
Yeah, you're in Delta territory.
You catch Martin, you know, 50 minutes the longer train ride to the airport. You must all that. Another thing that I often get asked is what age group of people should go on a safari? I was talking to a lady, in fact, the lady who had the two clients this morning. She has an 8-year-old daughter, so I said, how much money would you like to spend on your 8-year-old daughter right now? And, you know, the penny dropped. You know, she just, you know, you want to take somebody to a destination that they will remember for the right reason for a long time. And, you know, you're looking at putting a kid in a, you know, 20-hour flight. But, you know, of course, when they get to the game reserve, but are they going to give everybody else a good time? So we usually say between, let's say, teenagers. What's the oldest person I've taken in a group with me? 85. In fact, I took my stepfather, who was 90. I had the privilege of walking my mother down the aisle at the age of 70. Wow. And she married Neil, who was 90. So, you know, they're the only people that I will not take on a safari with me is somebody whose doctor would say, we do not advise you to travel. Okay. And then just today, I mentioned to somebody that because they're going in June, and that's winter time in South Africa, and I know I'm not a doctor, and I know this might get me into trouble down the line, but do not take malaria prophylaxis when you're going to visit a country in winter time, because you don't have mosquitoes. And guys, you need to write this down, okay? Remember, the only thing you need for South Africa is a valid passport, and what else do you need? What shots do you need? Write it down, girl. Write it down. You need a shot of whiskey when you get there with me.
I'm in.
Really, guys, and a lot of people, and I love making that joke because it just, you know, so many of us think of the, this shot and that shot, and do not go to the travel clinic. I, they are, when somebody wants to stick a needle in my arm, I usually say, well, have you been to that country? Do you know why you're doing that? Do you know? None of those doctors have been to the destinations where they're giving us the stuff for. They'll give you hepatitis A, B, C, D. They'll give you, you know, listen, the only thing you really need to make sure you're up to date on is tetanus. And if any of you have got a gate into your backyard you need it. So again, tetanus and malaria. You cannot take a pill to stop a mosquito from biting you. That's called that's called prevention. All right, Laura, how am I doing there, love?
You're doing great. One of the things that, you know, when I met Robin, one of the things that he said that really drew me to him is that because of the one of the fields I specialize in is that he has taken people with vision issues and hearing issues, and that he has rooms for wheelchair. He makes rooms for wheelchairs. So I thought that was, you know, the office has moved up to think that people who have any kind of medical challenge or disability could come. But he is, I love that, you know, so far as our cross all of that.
Laura, I was just being nice to you. thank you. I love you, my baby. That's a very valid point that Laura brings. I personally was in a wheelchair myself, second year of marriage, fell two stories off a building, ended up in a wheelchair, told I'd never be able to walk again or have children. I've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro three times, and I have three beautiful children. My father was an amputee, lost his leg at the age of 14. So I have a very compassionate, and I'm dying to take a full physically handicapped group to South Africa. I really am. Nobody else but I will lead that group. I look forward to it. It's a challenge, you know. I lost some friends in Tanzania in an airplane crash at the end of last year, and I took a plane off the ground just in honor of them. And you know, that to me would be something for me. That would be a privilege. And I've had the privilege of taking two blind ladies to Africa, legally blind. And two of the gentlemen that I took up Kilimanjaro in 2009 were deaf. They were legally deaf. They had cochlear implants. So, you know, please, if anybody is, as I say, the only person that I would not take is if a doctor said this person's heart is not good or their kidney, or no, we don't want to, let's get that sorted out. But honestly, if your doctor says go, make sure he can, no, go, okay? And nobody should be discriminated against color, gender. I laugh, I made a lovely faux pas the other day. We were working with a Greek Orthodox church out of Maryland. And I said, okay, I'll make sure that we're in Cape Town on Friday night. And Sue got very quiet. She said, no, Rob, that's the other tribe. So I've got a group of Latter-day Saints who are going to be with me in November next year, I think it is. And we've actually made sure that the itinerary, that they will be in Cape Town on a Sunday so that they can go to an LDS church. So, you know, all those, you know, don't, you know, because we personalize the itinerary so far down. I mean, even myself, I'm doing a fam to a couple of properties before a big meeting travel show that we go to in May, and I'm taking one of our agents with me. They are asking me what my dietary requirements are, and you know that's what we do. We pass all the way down.
So if we wanted to take a group to Africa, how big of a group do you usually do? What's the typical size?
So between I'd say 12 and 18, and then you know when you get a group, a big group like an alumni, that's when you hear that machine going to jing. the first university that we worked with, we took 80. That's 80.
Wow!
And don't pull your hair out, guys. It's you know, you're the ones who say thank you very much, because for me it was two 45-seater buses. It was four guides, two drivers. It was everything worked out military style. You know, Stella was a computer programmer. I was in the military, so. Put that together and we make a strong team. So
you break that group down into smaller groups then.
Exactly. But you know, we have lodges that can handle that size group as well. Which is important because you know, you guys, you look at those lights burning above your heads, eh? Something's gonna make it work. And if we're only in this for the love and the passion.
Some of the things that's different about a safari for our clients and that I, you know, really love and it'd be great if you would speak to is, you know, there are some people who will do like big bus tours or big cruises, and when they go with you on safari, there's 8, 10, 12 people. And it's not only the relationships, but the experiences they're getting of the guide and you and 8, 10, 12 people getting to see. You know, you're not going to drive through an animal park in a big closed bus with them. So if you just talk a little bit about that kind of experience and maybe what a day looks like in a safari.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we are in open vehicles. The only bus driving we do is in Cape Town because you're driving through a city to get to the penguins and the wine estates and so on. On the game drive, you arrive usually around about lunchtime, flying in from the USA, and we'll have lunch, we'll have higher tea, and then we'll go out on our first evening game drive. And the vehicles that we drive in are open Land Rovers or Land Cruisers. One person can sit shotgun. Usually I'll have somebody who has a mobility issue to sit shotgun. Then we'll either have 6 or 9 people in the back where you will sit 2, 4, 6, or 3, 6, 9. And often I've sat in the middle when we've had 9, and because you can look either side. And we'll go out in the evening, and what we really enjoy about the evening is going from the nocturnal, the daytime animals, to the nocturnal, to the nighttime animals. That's when you'll start to see some of the honey badgers. That's where you'll often pick up quite a bit of cat movement as well. Yeah. You'll find a leopard moving around.
Are honey badgers real?
Yes, honey badgers are real. Did you not know that?
Sorry, I just thought it was a meme. Okay.
When I see you blushing like that, I know what Honey Badger's song you think. Honey Badger doesn't give up. Anyway, we know what it doesn't give. But anyway, it's the most beautiful thing, as I say, to see the honey badgers, the porcupine, and some of the nocturnal animals. And of course, if we bump into anything which is nocturnal, like the antelope or the buffalo or the zebra, we won't shine the spotlight on them. But it's just a great feeling, whatever time of the year it is, to just switch that vehicle off at night. Some people get a little bit worried about it, but just to allow the bush to talk to you. You know, when you stop thinking.
Question. So I've seen out of Africa many times, and they do the safaris where they're doing the tent camping. Mm-hmm. And first of all, do you do the roughing at tent camping, and then do you do the glamping camping?
No, we do the glamping.
Yay!
No. Because the problem with the crawling pub tents, everybody and everything else crawls in there with you. So no, it is glamping. No. It's glamping. We actually have air conditioning in the tents. They have what you call a hard bathroom, which is a flushing loo and a shower on the outside. Some of them. But, you know, we go 4 to 5 star because really, guys, if you start booking those air beds and those 2 to 3 star, your return clients are not going to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, you have clients who had, I mean, we have so many people. I mean, we get emails daily. You've been recommended to us by because so-and-so went with you. And that's what you want. You want people to travel with you, that first fam trip that you guys do for yourself. Remember, guys, if I'm not guiding, if Des will guide it, one of my very well trained guides in South Africa will be with you from the start to the finish. And all I can say is those people that you took with you are the best investment that you've made.
So you do a late night safari, then do you do any early morning safaris?
No, Laura, we're going to leave you in bed in the early morning.
This is just sounding better and better.
What's really cool is we get to bed, we get in there that evening from the game drive, and then we will have dinner, which is an open fire. Most of our meals are buffet, and I've had some people say, oh, I want a plated meal. Then they get plated meals, and then they want a buffet. So what I like about a buffet is you can put on that plate what you want. And if you do have anybody with food allergies, the chef will know that well in advance, and he will make sure that there's no sesame seed or dressing on a certain salad or whatever. So again, the evenings are great. Again, as I say, the rooms, the accommodation. You're not going to stay in one lodge that I have not stayed in myself. Right? You can imagine I do a lot of traveling when I go to Africa between groups. Like now, before this, I'm staying in 5 different lodges and visiting, I think it's 12 other lodges as well. So we're always keeping up to date with lodge management and what's happening. Okay, then this morning Laura's going to come out and she's going to come and knock on our doors and wake us all up. And we have an early morning call. And about 5:30 in the morning, you get woken up and we go up and we have tea and coffee. And we get onto the vehicle as the sun is rising. Beautiful time of the day. Because remember, guys, middle of the day, nothing else moves except stupid human beings. Middle of the day. And that's when we're looking for Michelob Light. In the early morning, you're going to find some of the animals coming back from a kill, animals moving around and walking around. Right? And then again, we'll go for the morning game drive. We'll come back for a hearty breakfast. Middle of the day, one can do a lot of different things around the camp. We often have some very good spa centers. What is the best time of the year to go on a safari? Mm-hmm. If I asked you guys, come on, you tell me.
I'm going to say spring or fall.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, the best time to go on a safari is the time that it suits you best. People have gone around, okay, sure, East Africa, you just keep out of the rainy season, which is kind of December to April. It's pretty mucky and yucky and rainy there. Whereas South Africa, really, honestly, Cape Town has got a Mediterranean climate, so they get their rain in winter. So there is no time. And again, if you're working with school teachers or anybody in the schooling system, don't try and force them to go in March, April, May, or September, October, November. Their best time is June to August. So, you know, if you're putting a group together, which is school teachers, and then make sure you guys do that.
So that leads to the next obvious question, which is how long should you allow for a really good trip? I mean, obviously you can spend months in Africa or even in just South Africa and not see it all. So how long should you allow?
Okay, we spent 5 generations there, so that's again, I like that question because it's a lot more, I don't know, I don't want to flatter you, but a lot more intelligent question than I have had. What we like to do in Cape Town generally, and again, we cannot say when you fly into South Africa, we go Cape Town, Kruger, Victoria Falls. It just depends on accommodation, depends on everything, because I've started groups in Victoria Falls, Cape Town, Kruger, Victoria Falls, Kruger, Cape Town. It just depends on booking, but that is the general route that we do. I like to do 3 to 4 nights in Cape Town, and then nothing under 2 nights in a game reserve. I like to do 4, and very often when we're doing 4, we like to do them 2 and 2. So we've just had a group, a couple now that came out that did 2 in Karangwe and 2 in Kapama. So that's 2 different geographical areas. And so what's also good, because for every night you have a morning and you have an evening game drive. So if you're spending 4 nights, that's 8 game drives. And, being a honeymoon couple, that's another thing you guys must not forget, okay, our honeymoons. We actually have a honeymoon registry on our website. I'm sure you guys will be to my website. If not, just go to entabaafrica.com. But look at our honeymoon registry there. That helps. Stella's actually on her way to Las Vegas in 2 weeks' time to the romance and honeymoon travel show, whatever it is. Yeah.
Do you have any excursions for, say, flight seeing, if people want to do helicopters or small aircraft?
No, we do. We do. And that's mainly over the Victoria Falls.
Oh,
nice. We don't, unfortunately, because of poaching, that's a big thing. So anything in the air is there for a reason to go from A to C. Or A to B. Botswana, we do Victoria Falls. We fly over the Victoria Falls. Hot air ballooning in South Africa is really not a scene or to be good. You actually fly over some agricultural areas, and you might as well do that in your own home state. We do that here in Kentucky. there is hot air ballooning in Tanzania and Kenya. but we can touch on that later as we go down. How am I doing on time, guys? Are you about to fire me?
No, we're good. So we have some time.
I actually have a question. Do you guys also do shark diving? Because I've gotten a couple of questions about that.
We do, and we're going to put Laura in the front of the boat. We do shark catching. One must always remember shark cage diving, because we can dive with sharks. We dive with reef sharks and we dive with the blue sharks. But what it is, the shark cage diving is with the great white sharks, incredibly well organized and safer than crossing a road in Louisville, Kentucky. It is very safe. It's very well organized. The units that we use out of Stillby, which is an hour drive up the coast from Cape Town, have been doing this for many years, and they are involved in a lot of research as well.
Now, Elizabeth has this really good friend. His name is Walter. And they love to do things that are, you know, just a little bit take your breath away. So I think you should tell her about the gorge swing.
Oh, God.
the gorge swing. In fact, the company that we use, we don't do bungee jumping. Because bungee jumping is when you tie a piece of rope around your legs and they kick you off a perfectly good piece of wood. And I just have got a problem with that. My oldest son is a physiotherapist. And, you know, he just says, Dad, you won't walk again with the injuries.
Yeah, seriously. But
we do a gorge swing where you actually, it fastens around your waist and you jump off a perfectly good piece of wood. And while you're doing that, there's the zip line. There's also the flying fox in there. And also whitewater rafting on the Zambezi.
Oh, that's
cool. That's a great adrenaline rush as well, yeah.
So while we're talking about crazy things, Sandy thinks it's a good idea to dive with hippos. Is that something you do? Exactly. See? It's not a good idea.
No, I think hippos just look cuddly and cute.
Okay, Sandy, if I ask you what animal is responsible for killing most people in Africa?
I would say river otters.
There's some crazy outfit outside Nelspruit where you can dive with crocodiles and hippos, where they put you in the cage and throw you in the water with these animals. It's like, really? It would be... No.
So even the guy who is talking about swinging over a gorge says, do not swim with hippos. It's a bad idea.
I mean, they're always smiling and they look so happy. They look pretty chill.
You don't even know until recently that they had teeth.
Yeah, and their teeth are the size of your head.
With hippos, they have self-sharpening teeth. Their teeth close, they sharpen. No, it would be easier to run down 64 saying, can you hit me? That brings us to Victoria Falls. The Victoria Falls, again, Cape Town Kruger is real easy and relatively cheap as far as your flights go. But once you fly up to Victoria Falls, one can look at quite an expensive flight, anything from $500 to $800. But once we're in Victoria Falls, it's a really, really cool experience. I was actually in Zimbabwe when Robert Mugabe was house arrested. And it was like, I felt safer there than I did in any American airport. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we stay on the Zimbabwe side. We usually stay in a lodge called the Victoria Falls Safari Lodge, which overlooks a big water hole. And it's the most amazing experience to have your egg and bacon and watch life around the water hole. And while we're in Victoria Falls, something really, really awesome that we do is we go for a boat ride, a sunset cruise on the Zambezi River. It's a booze cruise, so there'll be lots of Michelob and whiskey.
Yay.
Again, I've had people blind and deaf and in wheelchairs join me. We'll carry you, we'll hold your hand, we'll push you. But when you get on that, it's a relatively short space of time, safari time. But you could call it a game drive. I actually had a crocodile take a bush buck during one of the boat rides. And the scariest thing, it was so fast. You know, we all want to push our remote and push replay. It didn't happen. You have these beautiful, beautiful sunsets. On Facebook, some of you have seen the pictures I've put. These stunning sunsets where the water goes coppery, coppery gold. In the evenings, we'll get back and we usually have a traditional meal where there's traditional dancing. Again, it's a buffet. And it's a great time to learn about a different culture. The next day, we usually go for a walk around the Victoria Falls. Actually, just recently on Facebook, I posted some of the paths, because a lot of people ask what are the paths like around the Victoria Falls. Very well concreted. They are undulating. So we pushed many a wheelchair wheelchair person around the Victoria Falls. Nobody over the Victoria Falls yet.
Sandy will be the first.
And, so if the sharks don't get me, I'm going over the falls.
I do not to play at the top of the fall.
And what's really cool, after we walked around the falls, we go to a craft market. And honestly, you know, I had somebody be a little bit facetious one day and say, I bet you we'll find made in China under some of those items. And I just looked at him and I said, you just, you know, you're a millionth generation American. But, you know, those carvings are made there. All this bling, all, you know, my official bling. I mean, that is all made, handmade right there at the falls, you know, in the craft market. And it's something really, really special. We usually put in a home-hosted meal. What that means is we have a couple of homes and a couple of people that we've identified that will cook a meal for the group. Now, let's say it's a group of 12. We'll split into six and six. And I've actually got somebody who is buying a sewing machine to send back to one of the ladies that they had dinner with, because they were so impressed with her. And she had a real old tent and sewing machine in the back corner. And they're buying her an electric sewing machine and sending it to her. So those are some of the relationships that we build as well. Some of the philanthropic work that we're involved in, I don't feel embarrassed anymore, because I have a big box. I can even show you.
No, you don't have to.
In my office. You see that big box? Uh-huh. Any idea what's in that big box?
It looks like a printer.
A load of bras. Paul Kruger's great-great-granddaughter and myself started an organization called Zabra. Z-A-B-R-A. And again, those of you on Facebook have seen me begging you ladies for your support. And they have been tremendous supporting me. And anyway, that was a box of bras that was sent down from Chicago. And it's so heavy that Stella and I have to carry the box. So there's a lot of support there. But guys, please just think about it. You know, when you get a letter or an email back from a young girl who received one of the bras that we've sent over there, and said, thank you so much. Now I can go for a job interview. When those go to the rape crisis centers, when those go to some of the women's shelters, man, you know, we don't track where they go, but we get reports and we get secondhand information that they are really grateful to have them. We took over just over 36,000 bras to Africa last year.
Wow.
The organization, Stella and I, were responsible for about six. I took bras as far as Addis Ababa in Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
All right, the other thing about tea bags. How many of you drink tea?
I do.
Yeah, rooibos tea, and I'm going to be selling that too. Look at my Facebook page. In fact, this is going to be my song. I have my rooibos tea here. Yeah. Anyway, guys, when you have a tea bag, please don't cut the top off the tea bag. Just cut the front face open when the tea leaves are dry, and empty those tea leaves out. And then those bags, again, why I'm mentioning this is when you bring a group over, we all feel so much more empowered when we go to give and not just go to take.
Right.
And when you take a bag of a tea bag that you've laboriously sat and emptied, it's a lot of work, I can tell you, emptied all that tea out, just put it in a Ziploc bag, nobody questions you. And remember, when you travel, we allow two bags internationally, eh? I often get these fingers wrong. This bag is for you. And who's that bag for?
For them.
That's for somebody else. Even these two ladies who are going on their own with the group that didn't happen, they wanted to know what can they bring and how much can they take and so on. So, again, remember that, you know, there is a reason for going and a reason for coming back, eh?
Can you talk about the coffee that you mentioned before we were recording, too? Because I think that's really cool.
Okay, there we go. That's what my bags are going to look like. This is Entaba African coffee. Mm-hmm. And what really inspired that, you know, guys, yes, it's business. Yes, I do make money out of it. We do make money. But Stella and I have had the privilege of walking through those coffee plantations. Mm-hmm. We've had the privilege of driving past and stopping and speaking to those people picking tea. And instead of a pouring money into UNESCO and to aid organizations, why not go and create a living? Why not help those guys? You know, those guys with the coffee plantation. I'm not selling 100 bags a month, but I'd like to. But can you imagine, that particular farm that we buy from, those guys' children can now go to school. That community can now afford a school teacher. That community can now get a doctor and get a clinic in. And just because of one small step that we've taken. The coffee that we bring in is what we call single origin. So it's not, I will be blending certain coffees, but a lot of people think African coffee is strong. No, it's just not that other one with the star and the, you know what I mean? I bring in green beans and they are roasted in Atlanta and the week they ship, they are roasted. So it's fresh coffee that you're getting. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege. As I say, on our coffee, we say, experience a taste of Africa. And that really is what it is. And it is an experience. And you are drinking some of the healthiest coffee you could.
Awesome.
Hey, Robin, before we go, real quickly, because we run out of time, can you mention a little bit about the chance that people have to go and see the gorillas?
Laura, are you coming with me now? Here we go. Okay, guys.
I want to go.
I
want to
go.
The gorillas are actually very easy to go and see. We either go in Rwanda or Burundi, or Rwanda or Uganda. Rwanda, unfortunately, have put their gorilla permits up very high. So that's already $1,500 on an itinerary. But we have offices both in Rwanda and in Uganda. And what I often do is I will combine an itinerary with Uganda and Tanzania or Rwanda and Tanzania. A great time to go to Tanzania for the migration is July till September. So, but again, that can be a reasonably pricey ticket. Because of the accommodation we insist on using, we are not going to drive you from the Ngorongoro crater to northern Serengeti where the migration is. If somebody wants that itinerary, tell them they go somewhere else. We put you on a plane and we fly you over that dry, dead desert area to where the migration is happening. So again, we'll fly you into Rwanda. We fly you into Kigali, which is the capital. We will do our gorilla trek there. And again, the gorilla trek, you've got to be reasonably fit. You are climbing at altitude and you are climbing through. You're climbing into a jungle. You're going into their backyard. They're not coming into yours. And it's, again, safety, 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 safety. I'm actually involved in the project right now. Get the paperwork here. But where we have taken game rangers out of the... we've taken poaching out of the... Oopsie daisy. We've taken poachers out of the jungle and we've trained them to be game rangers. And the next project that I'm doing is to get the to train the women to sew. We're actually supplying them with sewing machines. We did that in Kigali to bring some of the prostitutes off the street. And any of those of you who've seen my son, Pacific, his mother was a prostitute, so of course he has no idea who his father was. And that's just something, again, giving back. But the gorillas, great experience. Often it's not my first choice for somebody's first safari in Africa. I do choose South Africa just because it's a lot more familiar to what we have. Right? Yet when you get into the Kruger Park and you're on those vehicles, guys, and this is one of the things I say, we have one rule. We have one rule, and I love that people look at me like, you didn't learn to die. We have one rule, and what's that? No more than two vehicles at a game sighting. So when you go to the Kruger National Park, what does that mean? That's like, it's like Yellowstone or Yosemite. You see a big ass, one of those animals, a moose or deer or whatever you see, and 50 cars have stopped and 100 people have got out. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're on a private safari, only two vehicles. Those game rangers are in radio contact with each other. The animals aren't collared or anything. You have a tracker in the front of the vehicle, and he's tracked it. So let me say, there's been a kill early hours of the morning. A pride of Ryan pulled out a buffalo. There will only be two vehicles allowed at that at any one time. And you will spend as much time as you need to take photographs to just to take in that circle of life.
So we mentioned in the beginning the Big Five. Can you tell us what the Big Five are?
Okay, I can't remember. Laura, you're going to have to help me. The Big Five, the way you remember it is it's the gray, the black, and then the spots. So it's the elephant and the rhino. And remember what happens when you cross an elephant and a rhino? Do you know what you get? A libido.
So what you get is a bad joke, is that?
The buffalo, and what buffalo is that?
What a buffalo.
Laura, and you've been to Africa. Back in the class. We only get the water buffalo in Asia. It's the African buffalo or the Cape buffalo. And then it's the leopard and the lion. And do you know why they were called the Big Five?
Why?
Very sad.
Because that was the top game, right?
Because they're the most dangerous animals hunted on foot. Uh-huh. And you know what shark we're looking at when we go to South Africa? It's the great white shark. Now, another beautiful aspect of going to Cape Town during July to September is we have some of the best land-based whale watching in the world. If you have somebody who doesn't want to get onto a boat, we have tremendous land-based whale watching. And does anybody know what whale we see in the southern oceans?
Is it an orca?
No.
A blue whale?
Keep it.
A sperm whale.
Blue whale.
It is the southern right whale. Oh. And that's a terrible, terrible name for a sperm animal because the orca, the minke, the sperm, the blue, when they were harpooned and they would harpoon them from the boats, they would sink. And this was the only whale that they would harpoon and it didn't sink. They could use it for the meat and the blubber and so on. And honestly, that is why it was known as the right whale. So it's now known as the southern right. But they are incredibly well protected. Our Navy, the South African Navy, is the godmother to the southern right whale.
Nice.
There we go.
Is there anything else you want to mention before we sign off? Did we catch everything?
No, just wanted to thank you guys very much for having me on the show. And guys, remember, booking a safari is as easy as what we're doing now, okay? We will give you very good. I'll drop you some itineraries into Skype that you guys can share.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome. Yeah,
easy to work on the internet. You click on them. They're very easy to navigate. There we go. Got to negotiate awesome. To navigate. You get interactive maps. You get the accommodations we stay in, and yeah. In fact, you guys are quite special. We are launching our new website tomorrow. So tomorrow or the next day, our new type of website is coming up.
Awesome. So, Robin, as we finish up, say your favorite thing. When you go to Africa, you just don't see the sunset. What do?
We listen to the sunset, guys. That's one of the most beautiful things. Laura and I, thank you for that. That's very precious. That is something that you know, we really make the effort to stop and listen to the sunset. It really is. I mean, you know, Laura, if you're on a vehicle, if you're on that sunset, even with the booze cruise, you've got so many people making a noise. And as that sun's going down, you don't have to say a word, but everybody goes quiet. And, you know, as I say, it's a bit of a misnomer, but we do. We listen to the sunset. You know, that's when your nocturnal animals are coming in and are going out and your nocturnal animals are coming in. But it just, thank you for that, Laura.
Nice. All right. Well, that.
What other squeaky toys do you have there?
let's wrap up and then we can discuss the squeaky toys.
Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com and click on podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast or just search for Fly Away and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Elizabeth, Lindsay, Laura, Donna, and our special guest, Robin Mountain from Natava African Safaris. Thank you, Robin. That was awesome. And myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.